Way back when I was thinking about starting a high-ticket dropshipping business, the one thing I was looking for was someone to show me what one of these sites looks like. So John and I have done that for you at dropshipbreakthrough.com/go. So head to dropshipbreakthrough.com/go and watch the free training.
Oh my gosh, we just got a 90K order, but it's also a little angst and just trying to make sure everything's going to go through okay. You know, the shipping, there's just a lot of different parts that have to be put together.
You want to dive into that? I've got a few questions, John. I'm sure you got a few questions too. Maybe we can bounce back and forth here.
Welcome to the Dropship Podcast, where you'll learn how to build and grow a high-ticket dropshipping business and hear stories from successful e-commerce entrepreneurs. Let's kick this thing off.
Hey, welcome to the Dropship Podcast. And today we've got a fun one. We've got one of our students, one of our partners on the show today, who just did a $90,000 order. I promise you're not doing that with any of your little AliExpress dropshipping products. This only happens in high-ticket dropshipping. This can really only happen in B2B style of high-ticket dropshipping. And I'm thrilled to have you here. I'm thrilled to celebrate with you, Sharon. I hope we can post a little screenshot on the main image of this podcast, because it was a cool feeling to watch that come across my screen.
Yeah, it was great. Fantastic.
What's that like for you, though? This is easily the biggest order you've ever had. What is the first, like, emotions from you? Is it a sigh of relief? Because we're going to get into this. You know, it's a process to get an order like this. Or is it more like, is there some celebration in there?
There's both. There's celebration that it's like, oh my gosh, we just got a 90K order. But it's also a little angst and just trying to make sure everything's going to go through okay. You know, the shipping, there's just a lot of different parts that have to be put together. And so that causes anxiety. So it's really, you have both feelings there.
Well, you want to dive into that? I've got a few questions, John. I'm sure you got a few questions too. Maybe we can bounce back and forth here. How do you get an order? Like, that's probably where I would start. Like, where does that even come from? Because a lot of people are like, hey, how do you market different for B2B versus B2C? Is there anything definitively different about what we're doing that is attracting someone who could place a $90,000 order versus someone who places a $2,000 order?
Yeah, we got a call. And we actually get quite a few calls for commercial items. I think just on our site, we have a commercial page, and we just get a lot of activity from it. And once we get the call, we just have to figure out what they need. So everything's custom. It doesn't always go right away. Like, they aren't on the site and just pick a 90K order and put it in the checkout. We have to actually talk to them and go through the whole order with them. And once we figure out exactly what they need, then we get the price.
We have seen that too, right? I believe John sent me an image the other day of a $500,000 abandoned cart getting edited in our back-end. Is that like for me, it's more like a traction, right? And so often we get asked, how do you get these people? But the same people who are searching for a commercial unit, they might use commercial terms or industrial terms, but they're often searching for the same product. I'm curious if you think there's any way we differentiate other than like being there. Maybe John can help. John's in the ads heck of a lot more than any of us do on this call. And so, you know, is there something we're doing in ads, John, that is attracting these people?
Not as much as you would think. I mean, I would agree with what you're saying, that a lot of the time these sort of people are, one, going to Google. I mean, if you think about it, if you own a business and you're like, well, I need this piece of equipment or, you know, machinery or whatever it is for my business, I need to buy one. You haven't never bought one before. And these are products that people aren't going to be buying often because their lifespans are going to be measured in many years, right, Sharon? And so they're going to go to Google, like, to find, like, where the heck do I buy one of these things? The search terms are slightly different, though. So this is a product category that people buy a version of for homes, but there's also a much larger version, and like Sharon says, a much more customized version that you many different businesses in many different industries could use as well. And so the search terms are different. Like, for the same product, people who are buying for a business, they'll put terms like industrial, commercial in front of the product category, whereas people who are looking for it for their home won't have that in front. So we run two different sets of Google shopping campaigns that target those terms, and we only advertise for the commercial type products to search terms that are commercial, whereas we have the smaller units that run for search terms that we think are more focused around people who are buying it for their home. It's lines are a little bit blurry, but that's kind of what we do. But to be honest, we got a lot of ideas for attracting more commercial purchases that we're not even doing yet, to be honest. If I'm honest with you, there's a few things that are in the pipeline that we're going to do with this business over the coming weeks and months to actually specifically attract more. But as Sharon mentioned, she gets a lot of calls from these type of businesses just running off the standard sort of stuff that we would do in any high-ticket dropshipping niche, right? So, no, is it that much different to find them? No, it's not.
If you're listening in and you'd like to take the first steps towards building your own high-ticket dropshipping business, head to dropshipbreakthrough.com/go, where we've got a free training waiting for you that's going to walk you through the first steps you need to take to start your own high-ticket dropshipping business. And I'm going to walk you through an actual example of what one of these businesses looks like. What,
are they asking different questions when they get on right away? Are they telling you who they are, Sharon? Because they might be coming through that same generic term that works for homes, works for businesses, works for God knows what else we could sell these things to. But do you know immediately? Are they letting it be known? Are they hitting the contact us form? Do we have a section on the site that is, you know, meant for business, or is that something we're working on in the future? How do we differentiate these people? Or is it simply, you know, thanks for calling mystore.com. How can I help you? And that's just how we get there.
Well, it starts out just like if anyone calls, but immediately they let us know that they're a business and what they're looking for. And typically when we talk to someone who they're a contractor, or they're someone that's going to do the installation, or they're buying for the company. Whereas an individual calls for the same product for their home, they don't even know. We have to kind of hold their hand from the beginning to help them know exactly what they need, where they call in knowing what they need. We just have to get the specifics and work with our supplier and back and forth, trying to figure out to make sure we get exactly what that company or that business, or if it's agriculture, if it's a farm or whatever, what they specifically need. So it is, the call is different. And with a homeowner, sometimes it's one or two calls, few emails, but with a business, it a lot more goes into it.
Is there a number? Is there a, you said one or two calls for a residential person, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Is there a number with this order that you can like think of off the top of your head? Like, I know there's been a lot of communication here, mm-hmm. but John talks about this a lot. This is a customer service business, and people yeah. wonder, what does it mean that this is a customer service business? Sharon's about to tell you. Like, they called once, you acquired them to get to call you, then what did it look like? How many times did you go back and forth with it with this company?
Well, the first initial call was the beginning of May. And so if that gives wow. you any idea how long it's taken to get the order where it needed to be. And with larger businesses, there's more than one person. There's a channel. You have to get it. Like, we develop a whole separate invoice that we send, not through Shopify. It's an invoice that we send to them, and we work around that invoice with a lot of the terms. And so it takes more on that end than just putting an order in Shopify. But we email many times with multiple people in the company, because we have to talk to the finance department. We have to talk to, you know, whoever's going to be the project manager. So there's a lot of communication that goes into a large order.
Hmm. Did you know it was May, John?
Yeah, I knew it was somewhere around there.
That's crazy.
June, May, that's June, crazy. Yeah. I do remember mm-hmm. talking about it with Sharon back mm-hmm. when I think the process started. Mm-hmm. Hey, Sharon, I know a question a lot of people will have when they think about drop shipping and a $90,000 order, or, you know, a big, large number like that. A question that's going to pop into a lot of people's minds is, like, how are you paying for that? Because, you know, when we think of drop shipping, we're paying for every order up front usually, mm-hmm. right? We get right. the order. We process the payment from the customer through Shopify, and then mm-hmm. we pay the supplier, and the order gets shipped. Now, obviously, paying for a $90,000 order is a very different ball game to paying for a $1,000 order or something like that. How does that look, both from, you know, our perspective, but also, like, you know, what what you, people might expect to have a business request of them in terms of how payments are made and that sort of thing.
So for this particular order and with other ones, we've had some other large orders, not this large, but we have had some other large orders. And so what we do is we tell them right away, and these are the terms that our supplier also give us. So we ask for 50% down when the order's placed, and then right before it ships, we ask for the remainder, the last 50%. So what we do is we pay our supplier 50%, which minus our profit with them, our margin with them. So we pay them 50%, and then when they send us the payment, we pay the rest to the supplier. So I don't pay my supplier till the money is in my account. And just to let you know, this is a little different. Even though I'll put the order in Shopify, I do it manually, and I mark it as paid manually. So we don't get any fees from Shopify on this order because they're not paying with a credit card. With an order like this, it's an ACH. So we have in our terms that we give to them, when we give them the invoice and all our terms, I also give them our banking information. So they put half into my, an ACH you get pretty quickly. So as soon as it hits my account, I turn around and I ACH it because my supplier also wants an ACH. I will send it to them. So that's kind of how it works. So I don't have to worry about that end with that large amount of money, trying to pay that before I get the funds from Shopify.
And so I know you've been doing this you've had a few of these big orders, not quite this size, but large orders. Can you think back to when you probably got your first interest of this sort from the business? Because I'm just thinking about, like, you obviously would have signed up with the supplier just under the sort of normal kind of drop shipping arrangement.
Yes.
You weren't talking about, oh, what about when we get a $100,000 order? How are we going to deal with that? You must have had that conversation with them at some point. Do you remember that and how you kind of went about that?
Yeah, I just, when we got the very first, it wasn't actually the first, but one of the larger orders, I think it was around maybe 22,000 was that order, something like that. I'd have to go back and look. And so then I just talked to this. I was like, hey, because before that, we had some, maybe a $14,000 order or something like that. But this one, they actually wanted to pay half and down. And so I just went to my supplier and said, hey, what can we do? And that's when he said, let's do half when the order's taken and then half. So that's kind of how that came about. And they also had said any order over $8,000, they didn't want it on. I usually pay with credit card for all the other orders. They wanted an ACH. So I was like, well, I don't want to be hit with credit card fees if they're not. And so that's when I just said to any large orders, we immediately say that we need ACH payment.
Sure. I think 50% is quite common because that's typically what their margins are. Like high-ticket products, they tend to keystone off to their people. So when you put 50% down, they've covered all their bases, right? And probably and some more. But like that's typically what I've seen in the past as far as putting money down. Did you ask for, or did the business ask for terms with you? And in case the listener doesn't know, a term is like, hey, yeah, we'll pay you. Once it shows up, we'll pay you. Or it can be any variation of we'll pay you when it gets here, we'll pay you half before it comes and half 30 days after it gets here. There can be all sorts of net 30. I have net 90 with one of my manufacturers, which is wild. And so, what does that look like here? Was that requested? And then did you pass along that request as well and see if you could, kick the can down the road?
I did. So for this particular order, when I thought everything was set and then they send me an invoice and it said net 30, but I had already made it clear that it was 50, but again, we're talking about, this is a large corporation. So there are a lot of channels, a lot of people talking to each other, and sometimes the right hand's not talking to the left. And I was like, so when I got the net 30, I emailed one of the people that we were talking to back, and I said that wasn't in our terms. And I had already talked to my supplier about it before I emailed him, and my supplier said we do net 30, but we have to do a we'd have to do a check, a credit check on the company. And I didn't want to go through all that. So I just said, hey, you know, we in our original contract to you, we asked for 50-50. And he was like, oh, yeah, we'll expedite it. Let me talk to the finance company. So they went ahead and went with our terms. But that is something that I will probably need to think about in the future, because it's going to happen again where a company will want net 30, and how we can work that out. My supplier did say he would work with me on this one. And give us net 30 if it came down to that, but I've got to kind of figure that out in the future, for sure.
Well, there's only one last question. I know everyone who's listening to this is wondering, what does the drop shipping business make on a $90,000 order?
Well, it looks like we will make about $20,000 after shipping.
So I think someone listening to this, that might break their brain, right? Like that they could get a $90,000 order, that they could make $20,000, you know, in one go. Again, you've been doing this since May. This isn't like something you did overnight. But I do believe that's the power of the businesses that John and I are trying to teach people to build, that you can really do some orders like this. I've done an $88,000 order with Standing Destination to the government. I did a $25,000 order to some schools with 3D Printer Guy. And I think we've got tons of students. John, I believe we did an episode on this where we mentioned some more. Carla had one of the biggest orders, might be the biggest order that we've ever seen. Shout out to Carla. She's a beast as well. But to me, that's what's intriguing about this business model is that, you know, there's companies that make great products, and they need someone great like Sharon to help guide businesses, to help guide consumers down the path to getting what they need for their problem, and you get rewarded for that. And so, you know, I don't, 20K is nothing to like sleep on. I hope you're really proud of yourself. Like yeah. John and I believe as your partners are extremely proud of you. And this is truly just the beginning. We haven't even started here.
Yeah. And I'd like to point out too, the product itself was only a little over $80,000. But $10,000 of that we put in, we're working to have people go out to install it. So, you know, a lot of stuff went into that as well. So
it can often be more than just selling the product, right? Like you have to solve problems as a business owner. I believe we have a show coming up on this called Solve Problems. That's what it's about. And so you clearly solved a lot of problems here. I don't know. I'm very impressed. It's so fun to see orders like this, and it's so fun to see the smiles on people's faces when they've gotten there. Like, just, you know, I'm really happy for you, Sharon.
Thank you. I
want to throw a little teaser on the end. The $90,000 order is amazing. What's the highest number you've been asked to quote on, Sharon?
I actually did give a quote for $1 million. I did not get it. I did not get the quote or the job, but I did give a quote for $1 million. Yeah.
Yep. And where there's one, there's more. So.
And that was when...
Watch this space. We're going to have Sharon back in the future, and we're going to be talking about how she made a $1 million order. It's going to happen.
That would be fantastic. Now, that one made me nervous. I will say. Yeah. That made me nervous.
That's why. Yeah. So. I think this is possible in a lot of different industries, right? And we've mentioned a few on here. We've done a few good niche, bad niches on some things that I think fall into this category. But, you know, it is B2B, right? It is B2B in a sense that it could be, you know, the companies to which we're selling. It could be B2B in a sense that you're selling to the government, which is the biggest business of them all, the American government. And so whether that's the military or a three-letter agency or whatever it may be, schools as well. I think, you know, getting... It's a little bit different than what we talk about in niche selection, John. So how do you justify, you know, getting someone? We talk about going into a passion niche, right? This ain't a passion. It might be a passion. I just bought a product from us, and I'm very passionate about what it's solving for me. And so it might be passionate in that sense, but it's not like, you know, a guy loves golf, he's going to go buy golf stuff. This is very, very different, and most B2B is. So how do you like to think about that when you talk to newbies, John?
Yeah, I think you're right. It is different to what you would think of generally when you think about a passion-based niche, but I still think of it as one. Like, it's different, but to me, any B2B space automatically ticks that box, like, of it being an enthusiast type thing, because, I mean, many business owners are passionate about the thing that their business does, right? Like, their industry, the thing that they do, the thing that it does. But many business owners are passionate about their business and building a business that's great, and they need products to do that. Do you know what I mean? And so, like, I don't I think for me, it automatically ticks that box. It's not for necessarily the same reasons. Like, you know, we talk about B2C passion-based niches very much, you know, they're great for making content in, and there's lots of questions you can answer. But we also talk about it like they're good spaces because those are things that people will spend money on, right? Because they're passionate about it. They love it. And so the question of, should I buy this thing, is generally yes. And they tend to attract people with money, disposable income, which is what you want when you're selling high ticket products. Well, you know, businesses are the same, right? I mean, in that sense to me as well, like, you know, it's easier, I think, for businesses to spend money on things they need in some ways than it is for a consumer, because it's all going to be a tax write-off for starters, right? It's a business expense. If you're anyone like me as a business owner, I'm always looking for business expenses. I often can't find enough, right? I want to get my tax down. I don't want to have a massive tax bill. But it's not only that. I know that having better equipment is going to get me a better outcome. I'm going to make more money because my business is more efficient, because it produces a better product, like whatever it might be. And so I think B2B is kind of a no-brainer from that perspective. You know, you don't have people who are sitting there going, oh, should I buy this thing because I might not be able to feed my kids if I spend too much money on this or that. You know, it's not like the consumer space. But there are different challenges with B2B. Like, it can be more complex, as Sharon's mentioned. Like, there's a lot of phone calls here. She had to deal with installation and find a solution to installation that worked for the customer. And, you know, so there's a lot more to work out from that perspective. But, yeah, I love B2B. I think it's great.
I still think there's plenty of problems to solve, and you can find that just in the keywords, right? So Sharon and I had a call this morning where we worked on keywords. We found 99 collections that we need to build on the site. Each one of those collections will likely be sorted by 10 to 15 keywords, right? So now we're looking at, you know, 100 collections, 1,500 blog posts need to be made for us to, like, fulfill topical authority, if you will, right? There's lots of questions to be answered in this space. Yeah. And I think, you know, we talked before, what sets you apart? Why would someone buy from you instead of Amazon or Lowe's or Home Depot? Because they don't have 1,500 blog posts answering all the questions, and the person working there for, you know, $17 an hour who hates his life is not going to be able to answer that question for you, right? And so this is what sets us apart. And in B2B, you can really shine, right? There's really somebody who needs this problem solved. It's not just wants this. They need this problem solved.
Well, and most B2B products, you just cannot buy on Amazon anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, these products that we're selling here, they're just not on Amazon. You know, and that's going to be the case in most sort of B2B spaces.
Well, Sharon, I'm really proud of you. I'm glad you're on here. Obviously, there's still even more pieces to, like, get through to make sure that we all, you know, this is in the rearview mirror, not in the, you know, in the car with us at the moment. But I don't know. I'm super excited. I'm glad you were willing to come on here and share this. And I'm honored to be a part of it as a partner. And I think John feels the same way. And so we're really proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been great.
Thanks for listening to the Dropship Podcast. You can find all the show notes for this episode at dropshippodcast.com. And if you're ready to take the next step in your dropshipping journey, we invite you to join us inside Dropship Breakthrough, where John and I will walk you through step-by-step in starting your own high-ticket dropshipping e-commerce business. But that's not all. Dropship Breakthrough will also teach you everything you'll need to know to grow your business and take it to the next level. So head over to dropshipbreakthrough.com and sign up for our free training that will help you take the first steps towards building and growing your own profitable high-ticket dropshipping business.
John and I both love business, think about it all the time, can't turn it off, and don't know why anyone would want to. And because of that, we started a second podcast where we can talk about everything we've ever wanted to talk about in business, not just dropshipping. We like talking about all things business. So if you want to hear John and I talk about all sorts of stuff, from camel meat dropshipping businesses to PDF dropshipping to a guy gambling $100 every single day on YouTube Shorts, to how OnlyFans taught us lessons in business. We're all over the place over there, but it's a really fun podcast. So if you're a podcast listener, you love John and I, head over to your podcast player of choice and look for The Low Bar Podcast. You'll see a blue image and you'll see a cartoon version of John and myself. And go back and start at episode one. I promise you will not regret this. This is one of the more fun projects that I have done recently. I know John's having fun too, so we'd love it if you joined us. Check out The Low Bar Podcast on YouTube or wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts.